So I was thinking that we should have some more stand-upists in the Dharma community. I suddenly thought, well, we need some kind of jokes and humor and the first teacher that taught in Israel was in my house in the 80s, I forget when, maybe 87, called John Coleman, who was one of those Dharma stand-up. His talks, and we had 30 people in my house. We just emptied the house and made it into a hall like this. And his talks were just, we were on the floor. We were just 10 days every day laughing like crazy. And his story is so fascinating. He was a CIA agent in Thailand. And he was filming in a back of a van, secretly filming people out on the street demonstrating against the parliament or the king or whatever. And the CIA was somehow filming everything in a van on the street. And he began to get headaches. And so he went into a monastery because they said the monasteries are the place to deal with headaches. That's where you go. If you've got a headache, go there. So he went there, and that's it. End of CIA, end of everything. Became a monk, and he came in. He wasn't at all a classical monk when he came to us. He was working in the Goenka, he was part of the Goenka community, and Goenka community kicked him out because on the ninth day of a 10-day retreat, which happened in our place as well, he was really happy for a glass or two of wine. And when the Goenka community found out about that, they got rid of him. But he's not alive anymore, but he was a great stand-upist. So we can get a few of them, maybe somehow find, you know. Yeah. So I want to go back to something that the more or less the first words I said here when we met was how we kind of miss a direction, that we need a direction in our life, and we're not sure how to find that direction, so we keep hunting it for the future. I want this, and I should go there, and this is better for me. Or we look in the past, and this is who I am, and this is what I remember, and this is where I'm going, because this is my habits, and this, you know. And it's quite difficult for us to kind of really pinpoint in the present, who am I now, and what that tells me about my direction, where is right for me to go. And a lot of what we're doing here is of that, in that kind of place. Who am I now? And where is it taking? Where do I understand about my direction from now? Meeting my life is the best place to find a direction. But how does that work? So that opens Mamash Pandora's box, Kufsa Pandora. Because what drives me, my life? So you can say, well, thought. What drives my life is a decision I can make to go to university, to get married, to change countries, to move to Afula or the monastery. That's thought. But when we look at our thought and we look at the cacophony, the chaos in the mind, we think, my God, that's supposed to tell me what to do in my life? That chaos? has a direction to tell me? Can I believe what it tells me? So it's, you know, the thought of machshavot, it's como, they jump like a grasshopper, like a tuck, 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 all the time. So that tells me what to do. It's a problem. And we can't think our way to the future because we don't know. The future, we just can't think our way to the future. So that thought is what we think. We think thought tells us what to do, but that's a problem. So we say, well, it's not the thought, it's the heart. And indeed, neurology, in the study of the kind of mechanism of the mind, the feeling life, the amygdala or whatever, does come first before thought. So we can say the feelings, the hargashot, actually come much faster than thought. They come before thought, and they give us a direction, and then thought comes along and says, yes, 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 I should go there. And we don't know that it's the heart is actually telling us already, but we don't listen, we don't know it. But if we listen to the heart here, and we are, it's also mother crazy, and it triggered by anything. The food is maybe a little different today, oh, or the queue in the kitchen, the temperature, the thermostat there should be different, or all those pitakim that I was mentioning earlier. It should be, that's the heart. So that's going to guide us. It's like we're going to put 100 pitakim to ourselves every day from the heart. Want it like this, it should be like that, it's better like that. So, and anyway, the heart is triggered by, you know, our fears and concerns. So that's not so reliable place. And then we can say, well, it's just what happens in my life that guides me. If I do that, then this tells me I... But that's conditions, we're not in control of that at all. If that happens, go there. It's true, if you meet someone accidentally in the street and then you get married and you're with them for 40 years, like me, and you meet someone in the street, that's chaos, that's happening, that's life. And oof, off it goes, but you can't say you're really in control of that. So we need wisdom. And we need to get closer to these powers, which I said were three, but there's many more. But for the moment, three of them. The power of thought, the power of feeling, and the power of meetings with the world, the way we receive the world. So they're the places that if we understand those places more, it will help us to find our direction. So I'll start with thought. You all know, and as I just said, it's a noisy, it dominates, it takes us over, we're not in control of it, otherwise we'd all be instantly in super samadhi, but the thought takes us in 2 minutes, three breaths, and whoop, we're off somewhere else. The thought is very powerful, it does what it wants with us, and it seems we can't stop, it seems unstoppable. It's just got its own life thought and it just runs like a crazy, like the images of the wild elephant or the monkey or the grasshopper, traditional images of thought. So what are we going to do with that? Clearly, our problem is that thought seems to be very real and we believe it. And we believe it even if it's chaos and jumpy and uncontrollable and confusing and painful. But we still believe it. That believe what thought says is the truth. And apart from that, thought is really, really not helping us to be quiet. And I think any of us will see that in quiet, being more quiet will be more happy and contented, and maybe it will help us have a direction in life. The quietness, the sense of steadiness. So the Buddha talked about the thought as a fire, and he said that it's burning, 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 and we can feel it like that. It's a fire, it's burning, it's just bubbling all the time. And partly it's burning because we're trying to do just what I said before, to solve our problems. And it's like 10 Gaspar neutral. Lots and lots and lots and lots of thinking, trying to know the unknowable, which is the future, which we cannot know. Trying to solve problems which the thought doesn't do very well. And the problems cannot be solved very often by thought. Like problems of unhappiness, can we think our way to happiness? You know, it's thought doesn't do very well on many, many aspects of our life, but we use it to try and solve problems. Einstein said, we can't solve problems with the same mind that made them. So thought makes a lot of problems, and we're trying to have thought solve them as well. And it just can't do it. And that's why it turns around and around and around and around, trying to make decisions. Should I go here? Should I go there? What's better? What's not better? What do I believe? Who do I believe? Etc., etc., non-stop, round and round. So we have to actually look carefully at thought, and see that thought are forms that are made by consciousness and are constructed by us from consciousness. As consciousness is a power, but consciousness is not a thought. Consciousness is a potential, is an awareness. But it generates thought like the sea, the ocean makes waves. So the ocean in us making waves. And we build our world from that. We build a world. Are you okay? Tirgum? Yeah, maybe the language is getting... We're into places which are not so easy. Thought and stuff like that. Lokal kachkal. We build our world from thought. We build ourselves from thought. We build a me that wants to control. We build our, try and build our choices. And we need to watch that, how that happens. So there's a nice phrase or nice poem from the Theravada tradition, which says, sow a thought, reap, means, I say in Hebrew, Zorea Machshava Liktor Mila. Zorea Mila the Kote, how you say it? Kotzer, that's the word. I missed it. Zorea Machshava the Kotzer Mila. Zorea Mila the Kotzer Pula, Zorea Pula, Vukotse Hergel, Zorea Hergel, Vukotse אני, האישיות. זורע אישיות וקוצר גורל. Starts with a thought, and we build ourselves, and we build our whole life, and we build me, and who I am, and it's all coming. So we need to watch that. I'm not saying that. What I'm basically saying, what the Dharma is saying, is if that whole process is unknown, is unseen, is just on automatic pilot, then we're going to find ourselves in this same place of plain Gaspar neutral. Lots and lots and lots of thinking that doesn't really get us to the places we want to get to, doesn't? In the Buddhist and the Eastern, the whole of the Eastern tradition, thought and feeling are not separate. So everything you say about thought, you also have to say about feeling. The word citta is heart-mind. And I've said this before, it's quite nice. There was a Buddhist that was being tested in the laboratory for brain waves while meditating. And the laboratory people put a brain wave measurement on his head. And he began to laugh. All these sensorim, these cheshanim were on his head, and he began to laugh. And they said, "Why are you laughing?" He said, "Because all these senses are in the totally the wrong place." My thinking happens from here. So why are you putting senses up here? So it's Western that's where we think. The Buddhist tradition and the Eastern tradition as a whole sees thinking happening here and sees heart and mind as one thing. So we can feel it because the thought is always driven by feeling. What we look at, what we pay attention to, behind that is what we're interested in, what we think we ought to pay attention to, and that's the heart. It tells us that's worth paying attention to. That's worth paying attention to. There is a philosopher that said, we forget nearly 100% of everything that happens to us. 99.9% of everything that happens is totally gone. What's left, 0.1%, we call reality. So we go, our attention is where and the heart drives the attention, and that's what we call what I need, what my life is, where I'm going, what I should know. So the thought is driven by the heart, by our interest, by what we feel is painful or pleasant. And it's all the time small feelings are happening. And we need to be aware of those small feelings and be aware of the language of the heart. And it's part of it, like being aware of the language of the mind, we be aware of the language of the heart. And this is like an image of just sitting quietly and watching the water flow by. The heart is all the time saying interest, enthusiasm, sadness a little bit, reaction, fear, anxiety, love, everything. The heart is all the time talking. So we often feel, well, my heart doesn't talk. My heart is dry. I'm a scientist. And it's actually not the case. We, all of us, our heart is talking, but we just forgot how to look at it. So in your practice, there's a very practical thing. We can just listen to a bit more. We're walking and something says go there. What is that that says go there? It's a little message from the heart. That tree is interesting. I want to see this flower. It's pulling me. That's enough. That's the heart. Or don't quite want that one. Because that's slida, you know, aversion, not that. So it happens automatically, but if we look carefully, we'll see it's the heart telling us. So we can listen to the music of the heart right here. And it opens another language for us that is usually automatic. So we can really feel the way the heart and the mind are all the time together. How does jealousy work? We see something, we think that maybe our partner is talking to somebody else, or I don't know, we feel jealous, or someone's got something we want. It's a thought, it's a thought, and it's a feel, and it goes into strong feelings. And the two are totally mixed. What is a feeling? What is a thought? And it's usually not true. It's usually just mistakes, but the heart just keeps running. So, firstly, we can, a little bit in contrast to what I was saying, so for what we've been practicing here, we can actually work with thought as, you know, like making bread, lalush, is that the word? We knead the flour, the dough. The thought is very flexible. We can plasticina, we can play with it. We can change the thought, we can look at it, and then we can let it go. We do it here. We can say, no, not there. Or we can say, well, that's really impossible. I can't. We can stop it. We can say, no, I'm pulling out, I'm cutting, shutting off the electricity to that movie. I'm stopping that movie. thought is not as uncontrollable as we think. If we know thought from our meditation practice, and not only from a meditation practice, because we are all, in a way, wise human beings, but we think that we can't. But this experience of life tells us we can. Look at thought, know what we're thinking, be aware of what we're thinking, we can change the thought, we can play with it, we can think something else. We have much more power than we realize, and it's not just meditation that will give us this. For example, the instructions this morning were a lot about letting go. Letting go is, we have a power to do that. Okay, I don't need this. Thank you, goodbye. That's an intention to step out. That changes the mind. Or an intention to shift to kindness. We have aversion, we don't like this, it's irritating, it's long, mevayes, it's vaya, it's margizoti, mashu, because they're, wait a minute, kindness, I forgot. And the whole thing changes. What happened? We remembered kindness. My knee is hurting. This retreat is really going to screw up my knees. I wish it would stop, and I wish I get new knees. Go to hospital and get them changed. Kindness. What are you saying, my knees? I listen to you, I'm kind to you, I'm with you, I soften you, I soften the tension, and I'm going to move my leg to make me more comfortable. It's all of that is intention. It's changing the picture. It's kindness. So we can also see what happens with thought. We can see where it takes us. We can see where it goes. We can see what the outcome of this thought. If I follow this thought, what's going to happen? Where is it taking me? What's its energy? What's its quality? And maybe here you do need meditation, because the meditation is a power to kind of really go inside our inner world and really begin to see it like a landscape, like a field, walking about, watching the flowers. But we have to get in the field. So we can see what the thought does. Is it making, for example, a moment of anger? We watch our thought and we see how we are growing anger in this moment because of what someone else said. We got insulted. And we watch that. We see the way the thought is building our anger and our reaction. And we can watch that process and see, well, I don't need to go there. I can stop it right now. It's possible. So we can confront thought, we can name thought, we can give it labels, we can say it's this kind of thinking or that kind of thinking. We can play with thought once we actually see that it's a kind of waves in the mind that we can notice, we can see it. And helpful to know the way thought just passes by, that it's not really as solid as we think. And then it becomes also even more of a problem. Why the hell do I believe in my thought if it's just a little bit of mind energy that whoops passes by and goes, and I believe it, and it can make wars, it can make me kill somebody, and all it is a little bit of mental energy that goes whoop and it's gone, and we can't even find it, and it's gone, we don't even know what it says, but it can make us go and kill somebody. So we know thought passing by, we allow it to be just a phenomena, and a story passing by. It means we step out of the movie a bit. This gives us more power over thought. It gives us more relationship to our world of thinking. And what happens if we a little bit let go of the control of thought is that consciousness begins to talk to us more. Something which is not in thought. We'd have more access to the ocean. If we see the waves and we let them go, we actually can see the ocean. The waves are made of the ocean. Same stuff as the ocean. So if we get less busy with this thought, this wave, this wave, this wave, we actually can see a bit more the ocean. We're doing it already, but we don't give it that language. For us, the ocean can simply be being aware, being here, knowing that we exist, being with a tree and with a body, being with each other, presence. That doesn't need so much thought, it's about being. So it helps us to see the power of thought, to have a relationship with it rather than just to be a slave. They say thought is a good slave and a bad master. Adon Rav, Eved Tov. We see thought, we know it, we use it then when we need it. It gets quieter when it's seen. Maybe not this retreat, Okay, it might take a bit longer to quieten the mind. Possibly you need a few retreats. All our life we've given thought such importance and such high level of status that we can't undo that very quickly. We gave it power. Not so easy to take the power away. It's not that we need to stop thought or go against it or say that it's not useful. It's just that we need to have a relationship with it which is helpful. And that means less automatic struggle with thought, that it dominates everything and it controls us and we're not sure what it is and what it's telling us and how to decide and how to think. And how. A healthy relationship with thought is functional relationship with thought. We need thought. The Buddha couldn't have talked without a thought. But do we need the thought to be chattering monkey all day and all night? I have a poem in my book. I want to read a bit of it. How can a story float up from nothing? Or are stories always born from other stories? Thoughts are orphaned children. Orphan is... foam on the waves. Ketsef or Galim. This is a Tibetan image of thought. Ketsef Galim, that's the Tibetan image. You can see that it's not really anything. In the Zohar, in the Jewish mystical text, thought is described as just decorations. What do they call in Hebrew? Kishutim, that's right, Kishutim, on the Shekhinah, on the bed of the Shekhinah, on the female primal energy. Thought is just Kishutim. But beware, you stand before an angel or a demon that make us healers or killers. That's thought. Arising from nothing, returning to nothing, and in between, signifying the world, saying what is the world. So, raid the unknown and love the womb, not just the baby. The womb meaning consciousness, not just the baby, the thought. And let the power of nothing show us everything. So let me address a little bit the issue of how this helps to drive our life. How this working with the materials of, you know, said Lalouche, to be able to work with thought and to work with feeling, how does that really help us in life? What happens is when we are more aware and awake, erut, erunut, nochochut, hitpakhut, when we're more aware and awake, the awareness grows, our world gets bigger and is not controlled by this chattering mind. We replace it with a bigger sense of connection to things. We touch more the ocean. We get a sense of the ocean. We get a sense that we are more aware to what's happening in this moment. There's more intuition. There's more clarity and a big heart. because we are kind of not getting trapped in small thoughts and small heart and automatic. We open the language, we meet the poems that the heart is telling us, we meet the songs of the mind and the body. What happens then is that we feel more connected to our life and to all every other life and everything. And from there, we are less a puppet. Bubatal chutim. We begin to feel that we have more ability to choose because we know more. We have more awareness. We know more about what's right, what feels right, where we're going. We get more sense in the moment. So it's it letting go, which we're talking about this morning, is not that we're against anything. We're not against thought. We're not fighting the heart. We're not fighting the thought. But we're giving it less control so that we have access to a bigger awareness. We become a bigger person. And this is really important. If we want to go out to change the Prime Minister, if we want to go out to do good in the world, if we want to go and make change in the world, if we want to contribute something, we have to be bigger. We have to come from a bigger place, not be in the same place, and be in the same loops of fighting and arguing and I'm right and they're wrong, and we can't be in that place. We need to come from a bigger place. And that's this sense of a bigger awareness. And when we do that, the choices simply get easier. We just know what fits, what feels right. How exactly, don't ask me. We have more awareness of what's right. This person, who is more aware, just knows that this fits this person right now. This person can be Stephen or Shlomit. Just the awareness gives you a sense, I'm going there. Why? It's right. It feels matim. One Zen phrase says, the whole of the Buddhist teaching is in two words. Mila matima. A fitting word. In other words, ma matim. Hatama. You can put the whole teaching in with even one word. What's fitting? Hatama. So we can feel that in life. What's fitting? We can't guarantee we make the biggest mistakes, we'll still make mistakes. We can't avoid that. We're not in control of everything. But if we get a sense from a bigger awareness of what fits, mamatim, this action, this word, this movement, this direction in our life, and what tells us what fits, mamatim, mahatama, is not thought, but a sense of awareness and being with life. I know it sounds a bit mysterious. If most of you say, I don't understand what the hell Stephen is talking about, it's perfectly all right. You don't need to understand it, because anyway, it's just the thought wants to understand. Forget it. You don't need to understand it. But maybe something is a little bit, a sense you get from it, that if I was more connected and intimate with the life process that's going on, with the ocean and not just the waves, somewhere or other I will know Ech Lenavet in my life, to make choices based on what seems right. I'll just have more awareness of what feels right. It's actually, in a way, it's also quite simple. Everything's changing, we are changing, thought is changing, the heart is changing, the circumstances are changing, the viruses come and go. This year it's corona, next year it's something else. Everything is changing, nothing is for sure. We need to be wise to navigate with that. We need to know how to be with the flow of uncertainty and also challenge and discomfort. We need to know how to be in that flow And to me, there's only one way we can do that, which is open the wisdom eye. So I want to finish with a small quote from Etty Hillesum. She's such an angel, and I really love her diary, her Yoman. And she writes, at certain moments, when left to myself, I suddenly lie against the naked breast of life, and her arms round me are so gentle and so protective, and my own heartbeat is difficult to describe, so slow and so regular and so soft, but so constant, as if it will never stop. I believe that I know and share the many sorrows and circumstances that a human being can experience. She was writing this at the time of the Second World War in Amsterdam in 1940 with a Gestapo outside. I believe that I know and share the many sorrows and sad circumstances that a human being can experience. But I do not hold on to them. I do not prolong such moments of agony. They pass through me like life itself, as a broad, eternal stream. They become part of that stream, and this life continues. So let's just take a moment.